I don't care how smart you are, okay? You cannot navigate yourself through American healthcare.
My dad had saved $50,000, which was all the money he had in the world, to send us to grad school. And we're like, we have this idea to start a company, and we need about $50,000. So could we have it? And he's like, heck no.
And frankly, when you think about healthcare, I don't think we have a minute to waste.
So part of this is that if you actually produce a net better service, it doesn't mean that you're going to get paid for it. That was actually the really sort of incredibly painful lesson we learned from the first time that we built Athena.
They were really built to react to catastrophe. Mm-hmm. So they're great at acute care when the fit hits the fan, right? They're massively underinvested in, undersupported in preventing catastrophe.
So why is that a tech problem? Like, where does tech fit into this?
At A16Z's recent LP Summit, we brought together hundreds of our limited partners and portfolio founders back together again in Las Vegas. The event was truly overflowing with stories of how founders are challenging the status quo and harnessing technology to make the world a better place. However, there are two industries where there is no question that lives are literally on the line: public safety and healthcare. Yet, these are also two arenas for technological innovation that, despite being so critical, are also often equally misunderstood. And that is why we've chosen to open up two of these summit sessions to the public, to really show what a better version of the future can look like, even in industries where technology is not always celebrated. So, in our continued coverage of the event, today we discuss a company that is truly rewriting the rules of healthcare, and why two brothers thought that this was required in order to disrupt the industry. We've said it before and we'll say it again: the U.S. healthcare system represents 22% of the country's economy. If viewed as a separate entity, it would rank among the top four economies in the world. So in this episode, you'll hear from the founders of Devoted Health, Ed Park and Todd Park. Todd, by the way, previously served as the Chief Technology Officer of the United States, and together they chat alongside A16Z General Partner Vijay Pandey. The two brothers bond over their deep-seated commitment to rectify a, quote, broken healthcare system because, as Todd says,
it's a combination of incredibly important and unbelievably screwed up.
And in today's episode, you'll hear why building their own system from scratch may have been the only way, why healthcare is a tech problem, and how AI can reshape the system. But first, a story about the American dream. As a reminder, the content here is for informational purposes only, should not be taken as legal, business, tax, or investment advice, or be used to evaluate any investment or security, and is not directed at any investors or potential investors in any A16Z fund. Please note that A16Z and its affiliates may also maintain investments in the companies discussed in this podcast. For more details, including a link to our investments, please see a16z.com/disclosures.
I have the distinct pleasure of sharing the stage here with two true OGs in the space of tech and healthcare, Ed and Todd Park, co-founders of Devoted Health. So Ed and Todd need no introduction, but I'm going to give you one anyways. When I think about what we've seen here over the last 2 days, we've seen these beautiful examples how tech is going to really fundamentally improve our lives and change the world. And I can't think of a better standard bearer for this mantra than Todd and Ed. And they're applying it to healthcare. And frankly, when you think about healthcare, I don't think we have a minute to waste. Our U.S. healthcare system is fundamentally broken. And what they're doing is putting together a team of experts with big hearts and brilliant minds to go after what I think is probably one of the biggest problems that our country's facing: how we're going to pay for care and improve access and improve quality. So naturally, this is not their first rodeo. They're serial entrepreneurs, co-founded Castlight Health and Athena Health. And it's our pleasure to be able to partner with you as you build Devoted.
Honored to be here.
So thank you. So to kick it off, Ed, why don't you first tell us a little bit about your founder story? How'd you get here?
So Todd and I started Devoted 6 years ago together, but the story of Devoted goes back much further than that. It goes back to our parents, who came over from Korea in 1969 at the tail end of the civil rights movement in the Vietnam War. They came to the U.S. in search of the American dream: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, better life for themselves and for their kids. So my dad came over. He studied chemical engineering at the University of Utah, where in a moment of oversharing, he basically said that he and my mom, as newlywed grad students, had Todd as an accident. I'm like, thanks, Dad. And you didn't know that. And then he went out and got his first real job with the Dow Chemical Company, the maker of saran wrap and scrubbing bubbles. I remember those products because they were a really big part of my childhood, and became one of the most decorated engineers at Dow Chemical. He created more patents than almost any other inventor. And where he had me in Midland, Michigan, as he described again in the moment of oversharing, playing the baby. So good, thanks. Thanks again, Dad. We grew up in central Ohio. He was shipped off to a research facility in Granville, Ohio. And that's where we grew up, among the cornfields and apple trees of central Ohio. And we looked up to people like John Glenn, who we both got to meet, Dave Thomas, founder of Wendy's. And we grew up with this idea, right, this conception of America as a shining city on a hill, a place where you could do anything. So after we grew up there, we both went off to out east to Harvard. Todd was the good one. He studied economics. I studied computer science, and I still remember my advisor saying, computer science, it's a total waste of time.
Of course.
You shouldn't do that. Like, you shouldn't do that. But after college, we decided that we were going to pursue this dream together, right? This idea of creating a company together. This was much to the chagrin of our parents. So my parents, as you might guess, were Asian. And they're like, well, one of you should be a doctor and one should be a lawyer.
I don't care
which is which, but one of you should be a doctor and one of you should be a lawyer. And in fact, my dad had saved $50,000, which was all the money he had in the world, to send us to grad school. And we're like, we have this idea to start a company, and we need about $50,000. So could we have it? And he's like, heck no, right? He didn't say that because that's not the way he speaks. But he basically said no, but we were quite persistent and said, could we please have it? And we still remember what he said. He said, yes, I'll give you the money because I love you guys, but I hope you fail fast because you're my only two kids, and now both of our eggs are in one basket. So we started this company, and we've always been obsessed with the idea of how do you create value by doing good? And for us, it's always been about the right care at the right place at the right time. So our first company was Athena Health, which started off as a women's health company. The idea was that if you took better care of underserved moms during their pregnancy, you could reduce the number of NICU days on the back end. And here's the thing. The clinical model was successful, but it turns out that the business model was not for, it would take many beers to go through exactly why, but it has to do with the Byzantine nature of the U.S. healthcare system. In the process of building that, we actually built a set of internet-based technologies to help power that network of women's health practices. And that was an electronic health record and revenue cycle management system, back office systems. That was super successful. We scaled that incredibly quickly, took that company public in 2007. It was the top IPO on the NASDAQ of that year. It was about the time that my dad looked at us and said, it's okay that you didn't become a doctors and lawyers. And we went on. I stayed on board as a public company executive for the next decade while my brother Todd went to DC to serve in the White House. But that's how we got started. During that time, we learned a whole lot more about exactly what's broken with U.S. healthcare. And we developed a lot of theories about how to fix it and devoted to the result.
Yeah. Well, and we'll get to that in a second. But Todd, I'd love to double click on one thing. So you two could have gone into so many different areas of tech. I mean, you're CTO at the White House under Obama. Like, why healthcare?
Because it's a combination of incredibly important and unbelievably screwed up, right? Which for an entrepreneur is like catnip. Because what that means is if you can actually go in there and build a solution that's helpful, you can actually create massive impact and massive value. And it's where you can both create some of the most valuable companies ever, right? And in the process of doing so, and really as your core output, it's literally save lives. Mm-hmm. Like literally save lives, dramatically improve lives, end pain, end suffering, protect lives, extend life. And it's just the most exciting kind of mission to be on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Ed, you alluded to this. Could you tell us a little more, especially for the non-healthcare people in the audience, what works and what doesn't work in healthcare?
I think one of the reasons that we looked at this, right, is that the way that you hear about startups in Silicon Valley, the standard advice is find an itch and scratch it, right? Go out there, find a little problem, get sort of a little bit of a beachhead and expand from there. And it turns out that doesn't work because the fundamental economics of healthcare make it such that if you try going that way, at some point, someone's going to kill you. Yeah. So for example, if you have a working diabetes management program, somewhere along the way, I've talked to hospital CFOs who basically said, I can't fund our diabetes management program, because it's actually successful in keeping people out of the hospital. I'm actually reducing hospitalizations, but why would I pay for that when it's actually reducing my core revenue source?
Yeah, you're taking money away from someone.
You're taking money away from someone at any given point. And so part of this is that if you actually produce a net better service, it doesn't mean that you're going to get paid for it. Mm-hmm. That was actually the really sort of incredibly painful lesson we learned from the first time that we built Athena.
So what does work?
So what works is that you actually have to find a way to get paid. by delivering better care. And as we have talked about a ton, better care, if you actually deliver it consistently at scale, results in lower costs. But it's actually better care. No one wants to go to the hospital. No one wants invasive surgeries. No one wants a lot of things. Sometimes the better care will cost more, but in aggregate, it will cost less. Mm-hmm. And so what does work is if you're able to take the total cost of care and then do everything you can to make sure that you take care of folks. And if you do that well, and they use some of those expensive services less, then you get to profit from it. And that does work.
Yeah. So why is that a tech problem? Like, where does tech fit into this?
In order to understand what the best care in the world is, you have to deliver the right care at the right place at the right time. And that is an unbelievably complex logistical exercise. Healthcare represents 22% of the U.S. economy. Yeah. As a global economy, U.S. healthcare alone is in top four economy in the world if you look from a country basis, right? There's the U.S., China, right? Germany, and then you have U.S. healthcare as its own economy. It's an unbelievably complex logistical exercise. And the coordination that's required to make sure that people get the right care at the right place at the right time is a sort of logistical and technical exercise on the order of the most complex logistics things that you've ever seen. Yeah. The problem is that it's not set up that way. And so from our perspective, what was really important is to look at it as a fully integrated vertical thing that you could optimize against. And so the question we asked ourselves was, what would be required to build some sort of system to make that work?
Yeah, it sounded like basically you had to create your own system.
You have to build it all from scratch.
Yeah. So Todd, how do you build something like that, especially integrating all these different pieces and pieces that sometimes don't really go together, like tech and healthcare sometimes?
Yeah, no, that's right. It really helps to be a middle-aged entrepreneur when you do that. It's taken Ed and I about 25 years to figure out how to do it and to actually have enough credibility to assemble the dream team and the partners and the resources to do something that's ambitious, which is we basically built from scratch an alternate universe, full stack, tech-enabled American healthcare system as a service. Because it turns out that's what you need to do if you want to deliver at scale what Ed just talked about, right? The right care in the right place at the right time that basically both drives radical improvements outcomes and simultaneously lowers costs a ton. Because as grandma says, a stitch in time saves nine. Right? If you get people the right care up front, they stay as well as possible and they stay out of the really expensive hospital, right? So Ed and I realized at the beginning of our journey that in order to actually deliver on DeVoe's mission, which is to dramatically improve health and well-being of older Americans to start, eventually everybody, by caring for everyone like family, and because what you want for your family is get them the best care in the world, and that's the right care, right place, right time, we realized basically after 25 years of learning mostly the hard way that you had to build this complete alternate universe healthcare system as a service in order to actually hyperscale that set of results everywhere, right? And so what does that look like? What does that really mean? Basically, we have built, people call it a virtual tech-enabled Kaiser Permanente, a tech-enabled Payvidor, it's a combination of pay and provider. Like, we call it an all-in-one healthcare solution. And it consists, if you pop the hood on the thing, of five ingredients, all of which we deeply masochistically built from scratch. We built an entire health insurance company.
But you also, because you had to, right?
You have to. And so basically, and I'll kind of describe the have to's each layer, right? So five layers, right? Layer number one is we built an entire health insurance company from scratch, right? Because if you're dependent upon the legacy health insurers, you're effed, right? They're just not going to help you, not work with you. You're just not aligned to really support getting best care in the world to your patients. And so we built our own health insurance company so we could control the funding, the data, the operations, the service to orient all the muscles of a health insurance company to basically do one thing, focus on getting you the right care up front that keeps you as healthy and well as possible. And ingredient number two is we built a navigator service called Devoted Health Guide, which is a tech-enabled concierge that navigates you through the liquid ball of roiling chaos that is American healthcare, right? Why do we do that? Because I don't care how smart you are, okay? You cannot navigate yourself through American healthcare.
No.
Anyone who here has ever been a patient or care for an aging parent can testify to this. It is unbelievably complicated. So we have a concierge, a tech-enabled guardian angel that navigates you through the healthcare system, right? Ingredient number three is we partner with great local doctors and hospitals, and we love them all, but there's one very deep problem in the legacy network of doctors and hospitals, which is that for a whole bunch of historical reasons, they were really built to react to catastrophe. So they're great at acute care when the fit hits the fan, right? They're massively underinvested in, undersupported in preventing catastrophe. So that's a problem. So then we built ingredient number four, which is our own full-scale in-house medical group, the first truly great virtual care provider for seniors that doesn't replace your doctor, because you generally don't want that, but rather complements your doctor by delivering 17 additional major care services to whoever needs them, and 95% telemedically, the rest
at home in person. They're collectively preventive care stitches in time to save 9. Concierge-like high-tech, high-touch care that basically keep as well and healthy as possible. And then finally, last but definitely not least, and the key to the entire thing is software. Software eats the world, right?
Yes.
So number 5 is Orinoco, a software platform that we built, like everything else from scratch. It's the first ultra-modern software platform capable of running both a health insurer and a care provider in one end-to-end system, right? And on top of that, more fundamentally, it's a right care, right place, right time machine. From thousands of different sources, it's building a complete picture of you, both clinical and non-clinical, and then analyzing you and then computing what you need next. And then the software platform owns its own health insurance plan. It owns its own navigator service. It owns its own virtual care provider and just orders those levers to then do all the things and often really complicated logistical coordination exercises, right? To make something very simple happen for you, which is the next right thing. And the next right thing, including a bunch of stuff that you never thought you needed, but are collectively the stitches in time that save 9 and keep you as well as possible and out of the hospital. So we were the first ever to be crazy enough to even try to build what I just said.
Yes.
We started in 2017. We built the thing. And we can't quite believe what it's now doing. I feel like we split the atom. It's like a thing that's now out of control in a really good way. So it delivers a net promoter score for members of 77.
Wow. So that's Apple level.
Higher than Apple. Higher than Apple. Starbucks. Higher than Netflix. Higher than Amazon. Wow. Higher than USAA. Companies we worship, by the way, right? Wow. And way higher than healthcare, right?
Yeah.
Secondly, 5-star quality on clinical outcomes. Clinical outcomes that our own clinicians can't believe. Mm-hmm. Actually, like best in the world at managing chronic illness, best in the world at intensive home care, best in the world at so many things. And then it cuts the cost of Medicare. And if you actually look a little bit deeper into that, what happens is we actually do more what's called primary care for people, preventive care, than what happens in the U.S. health system overall. And that's a stitch of time that saves on hospital costs and specialist costs and ancillary costs. And then we actually give some of those savings back to America, the American government. We take some of the savings and we actually invest in better benefits in Medicare at the health plan level and better service. And we keep some as profit. And actually, the combination of the superior benefits, superior service, all underwritten by superior care, has made us the fastest growing health insurance plan and medical care provider for seniors by a factor of 10 in America.
Wow.
We started in 8 counties in Florida with 2,300 members in 2019. And we now serve across 13 American states, 140,000 members. By the way, in our initial target segment, which is called the Medicare Advantage market, which is basically outsourced Medicare delivered by private sector companies for seniors, right? That's a $425 billion market.
Yes. It's still early.
That's actually projected to grow because the U.S. population ages to $1.5 trillion by 2035. And then the other thing I'll just say is that, look, I mean, we're starting with seniors, but everyone deserves the best healthcare in the world. And also have begun, again, this is all a little surreal to me, to get calls from other countries.
Yes, wow.
Saying, can you come here and basically power my healthcare system? Be my tech-enabled healthcare system as a service?
Because they're not going to build Orinoco. They're not going to be able to build this.
Look, I'm very confident that no one else can build what we built because, A, it's so incredibly hard.
Yeah.
B, you need to have built at a very particular point in history where you could leverage all the learnings of the decades, but where things are still early enough, right, that you have a ton of runway, right?
Yeah.
Just thirdly, just to be perfectly honest, right, because at the end of the day, what you just learn about entrepreneurship is that people are everything, right? Mm-hmm. No one else has my brother, right? I mean, no one else has my brother. I'm not aware of any other human being like my brother, and he'll never say this about himself, but he's like the Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart of healthcare software, right? He's both one of the best engineers on the planet. And secondly, he spent his entire life professionally in the guts of the American health system. And so that intersection of the two, like nothing's a mystery to
him. Let me double click on that because actually what's amazing is, Ed, you were basically the first architect and coder for Orinoco, the software.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of amazing. I don't know how many CEOs can do that. And actually, I was so jealous when you mentioned recently that you're starting to code AI with your own hands and play with these tools.
Oh, I play with everything. I abhor black boxes. And so I love just opening them up and looking at things. But I mean, good thing, I love my brother as well. Actually, like when we were growing up in 8th grade, I still remember Ty coming up to me and saying, hey, all my other friends treat their little siblings like crap. I promised you I'm going to be the best big brother I possibly can. And he's kept his word. Yep. He's been the best big brother ever. Like it was a little bit tough. When we built Athena, Todd literally locked me in a closet and said, don't come out until you build software. And I'm like, okay.
All great brothers do, right?
All great brothers do.
It's a true story, okay? So.
Right?
So basically, Jonathan Bush and I start Athena.
Yeah, yeah.
And we get into really big trouble. And so I decided to call my brother, who's like a hotshot like internet consultant at the time, making six figures out of college, right? And we're in deep, deep, deep doo-doo here. Can you come help? And so yeah. He quits his job and comes to work for $18,000 a year and Athena stock, which then worked out for him, right?
You know? Yes.
But we needed to build software to run what we're doing. So he literally like works in the equivalent of a closet. He literally gets up in the morning, starts coding, goes back to sleep, gets up in the morning, starts coding, right? So he writes 250,000 lines of code himself.
Wow.
At a key stretch, the QWERTY keyboard
yes.
was designed in the early 20th century to actually slow typing down because it would burn out the machines. So there's actually a format called Dvorak, which is much faster. Literally the rate at which he could type was the rate limiting step on his ability to create software. So he literally reconfigured his keyboard to do Dvorak, right?
Yeah.
And built like Tony Stark in a cave in Afghanistan in the movie yes. Iron Man, right? In a closet in a women's health practice in San Diego, he wrote the first web-based, it was called at the time, right? Software platform to run doctor's offices, right? And it was just like ridiculous. Yeah. And he still codes, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
Well, I want to get to that. What are you doing with AI?
So AI is amazing. So number one, I actually think that one of the interesting things about AI and about technology in general is its leverage capabilities. I probably wrote 100,000 lines of code so far at Devoted, personally. And so when AI comes along, I'm looking at this stuff and you don't know. There's a bunch of hype, et cetera. So I go into it and I'm like, OMG, right? And I say this as someone who is incredibly practical when it comes to technology. Mm. Like AI is actually the biggest advance, I think, to technological productivity in terms of the things that you would do on a practical day-to-day basis since Mark actually invented Mosaic. And so when you look at it, I think of AI in two major buckets, right, as it applies to
yeah.
what we do.
Yeah.
The first major bucket is administrative. So somewhere between 15 and 30% of total healthcare cost is waste, shuffling paper around.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the first places we're looking at is how can we use AI to reduce a lot of that waste so that people can actually take, every day we have a choice between do we actually spend this money on care
yeah.
or do we spend it on shuffling papers? I'd rather spend more money on care,
absolutely.
Right? So the first area that we look at it is how much can we do on that side? The other area that I'm excited by AI is in its ability to help make better clinical decisions. If there's a way to make sure that you surface the right decisions mm-hmm. at the point of care, and by the way, this works better in value-based care where you get paid for making better decisions.
Right. And you've created the value-based rails.
So. Yeah, exactly. So if you're in a value-based rail, right, then you're in the situation where the AI, which allows you to make better decisions, mm-hmm. will actually pay back in spades.
Yeah.
So we're really excited about AI.
We're running out of time, so I want to ask one last question for you, Todd. Let's take a quick trip to 2030, like 6 years from now.
Yeah.
So Devoted has an AI-driven engine, has had deep tech, you know, from the very beginning, and you're reaching nationwide, maybe worldwide scale to some degree. What does this mean for patients? What's the world that you're building?
Yeah, so basically what it means for patients today and what it's going to mean for patients in 2030, and I think as amazing as the impact Devoted has today is we're going to be literally 10 times as powerful. But it basically means people are living and are going to live longer, healthier, happier lives. The ones they're really meant to live, right? It means people who are here versus not. Right? And it means families that are whole instead of broken. It means people who are fulfilled and well and not suffering. This is what really gets Ed and I up in the morning. There's a channel on Slack at Devoted, which is called Member Wins. And every day people write stories of the impact we've had on people's lives. And to see lives being so deeply touched and changed and protected and saved is the most motivating thing. Is the most profoundly motivating thing. And we're already doing that at scale. And by 2030, we're gonna do it with a depth and a breadth and a power that is way the heck beyond even where we are now.
Yeah, well, let's effing go. Let's get this done.
Yeah. Let's do this.
Yes.
All right.
So with that, please join me in thanking Todd and Ed for such a stimulating discussion.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank
God
you.
Bless.
If you liked this episode, if you made it this far, help us grow the show. Share with a friend, or if you're feeling really ambitious, you can leave us a review at ratethispodcast.com/A16Z. You know, candidly, producing a podcast can sometimes feel like you're just talking into a void. And so if you did like this episode, if you liked any of our episodes, please let us know. We'll see you next time.